The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only. Any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk and should not be considered legal, business, or medical advice. Hello and welcome to the Healthcare Maze podcast. My name is Mike McLafferty, and I'm the CEO of MJM Advisory and Educational Services. Today, we're going to discuss the key factors that physicians need to review when considering selling their practices to a private equity firm. We are pleased to have Ron Dreskin and Bert Orloff as guests on this podcast. At this point, I'm going to ask Ron to give us kind of a brief overview of the Eisner Advisory Group and his role and Bert's role in it.
Michael, first, thank you for inviting Bert and I to participate in your session here today. We appreciate the opportunity to speak, and it's always good to see you. My name is Ron Dreskin, and I am the managing partner of the healthcare advisory practice at Eisner Amper. Eisner Amper provides both financial services, attest services, and advisory services. Healthcare is part of the advisory group. With me today is my colleague, Bert Orloff. Bert is managing director of the healthcare practice, and he is an expert and specializes in strategy and operations, and will lead most of this discussion as it pertains to the questions around selling and PE opportunities. Personally, I've been in healthcare over 40 years, both in hospital roles, healthcare administrative roles, as well as in leading the organization here in a consulting capacity. Bert, what would you like to say a few words about yourself?
Thank you, Ron, and thank you, Mike, for inviting us. Pleasure to be here. As Ron said, I am Bert Orloff, Managing Director and Head of Strategy for our Healthcare Advisory Group. I've been in management consulting for 30 years, exclusively in healthcare, in the provider side. And as a strategy leader, I spend time looking at trends and thinking about where the market is going for providers. In terms of the specific topic for today, PE and physician practices, we have, as a group, under Ron's leadership, done dozens of deals on both the buy side and the sell side. Buy side meaning hospitals or PE firms that are looking to acquire, and sell side being providers, small to large, that are actually selling to PE firms, institutional investors, or even sometimes hospitals.
One of the good things here that we have with Ron and with Bert, which I think is a real advantage for our listeners today, is that they've been on both sides of the table, so to speak. So besides helping physician organizations, as Bert just said, become part of a private equity firm, they're actually hired also by private equity firms to help find and retain, in effect, or merge or buy out physician groups. So they really have a good idea from both sides as to what the interests are, what the possible upsides are, what some of the risks are, depending on which side of the table you're on. I think that experience there is going to be very beneficial to us. We're going to go over a few key factors today in this podcast as to why any physician practice would make the decision to sell to private equity. The first factor has to do with strategy, and that talks about aligning goals, growth opportunities. Why don't we talk about strategy first?
The first step in strategy is really to determine whether or not your practice is prepared to leave an entrepreneurial business or running your own practice and sharing those roles and responsibilities with a larger organization. In order to actualize the investment of the growth of your business, there will be some givebacks, if you will, autonomy being one, management, the cultural old-fashioned intricacies of your organization, things that might make it pleasurable or enjoyable because of the years of working together, need to be looked at for the greater opportunity of financial actualization and growth. And those are not easy decisions to make. One could always say, let's go after the money, without realizing those key ingredients. Additionally, when you think about strategy, is timing. Your practice will be worth more to whoever you're speaking to if it's more profitable than others, and you're able to document that. So a good strategy at the beginning of any of these business opportunities is self-evaluation of how your practice works and whether or not you can increase that profitability prior to any discussions around sale. You want to do as much as you can to improve your practice before any discussions take place about value. So by increasing your own value, you're increasing your visibility to a potential investor.
I think that's really good advice, because I've also had a number of experiences where we're called in to consult with a firm that was thinking of being bought out by someone else. One of the first things we realized was they had the opportunity to become more profitable than they were right now. And so as an interim step to the sale, there was an effort that was made to make them much more efficient and possibly continue some additional growth. Then we'd have the organization
negotiate with the buyer.
And as Ron said, it really did help improve the value of that organization. That's really great advice. And I find a lot of times when I get called in from attorneys to talk about a particular practice, most of the time, this interim step does not take place. They're just looking to sell.
And I'd like to build on that. I think strategically, understanding your own group dynamics, if you know you're a single provider, it's a sole person's decision. If it's a partnership or a collaboration, you have other people to consider. And you want to have alignment of goals among the partners, owners of the practice, so that they go into any negotiation prepared to execute on a common strategy, not find themselves debating internally what the objectives are. We're also seeing that because most of the deals are structured with an upfront cash buyout, some of which may come in the form of equity in ongoing operations by the PE entity. And typically, there is a short-term reduction in compensation. The strategic imperative needs to be thought of somewhat differently for providers who are close to retirement than those who are early in their career, because the financials look differently. And I'm sure we'll talk about the financials in a few minutes. And the long-term versus short-term impact looks pretty different. And there's the financial part. And then there's also, if you will, the cultural part. If you're more senior in your career and you're looking at retiring in a couple years, what you may be open to tolerating in terms of being managed by a third party could be very different than if you're at the beginning of your career.
I agree. I think all of us have seen in our careers that
the physicians
closer to retirement look at these things one way, and the younger physicians look at this another way. So that's really good advice. Let's talk about, as a second factor here, culture. And culture is an interesting topic. A lot of people have their own definitions of it, but a lot of it has to do with something Bert was just talking about too. But this is between now two organizations. Shared values and vision. What kind of leadership
styles do they have? How do they communicate as an organization?
So what's important about this is all parties have to go into this with their eyes open. Physicians became physicians to treat and heal patients. Private equity people did not have the same impetus to go into the field that they went into. And it sounds like an obvious thing to say, but both sides, when it comes to culture, are going to have to compromise. There's going to be compromise in order to get to the solution. Both sides have to compromise, and physicians will compromise on how they're running their practice currently, because the goal of a private equity firm is not to buy one practice, but many, and then centralize what's called it the back office functions to create efficiency. And that efficiency creates more profitability by lowering costs and hopefully becoming more productive. It sounds great, but when you have to change your behavior and how you are focusing with your colleagues and with your patients, with your staff, compromises will be made. And so culture really needs to be spoken about really directly with the recognition that the financial benefit will only come through a good compromise.
And the challenge here is the private equity side. I don't want to summarize it too much, but they're focused on return on investment, and the physicians are trying to get the best value for their business. But as Bert brought up before, the older doctors are thinking, I can put up with pretty much anything for 3 to 5 years. And the younger docs, especially if they're not owners, they might not even know the details of the actual deal. One of the big things I think we all see in these deals is the compensation, especially for the physicians, for some period of time, certainly goes down to the median on the scale.
This is typically a reduction from the 75th salary percentile. Let's talk further about the financial side.
Mike, I think that's right. And they're really integrated, the financial and the compensation, because from a kind of nuts and bolts perspective, a value is defined for the practice, typically based on earnings. The phrase is EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And as Ron and Mike were saying before, you want to maximize that number before you go out to the market, you, any doctor group, regardless of the size, so that you get the best valuation and therefore are going to get the most attractive, meaning highest offers for the practice. Then once you've optimized the valuation of the practice, there's typically then a discussion around how much of that value will be paid out in cash versus in stock or some form of equity in this organization. As Ron discussed, PE firms are not looking to buy a single practice and leave it at that. They're looking to buy multiples. So they're creating a new entity, which is perceived, as Ron said, as having value long-term by creating economies of scale and higher profitability and productivity. So weighing how much comes in cash, how much comes in equity in a new venture is an important set of issues. What are the terms? Specifically, how long do the doctors have to continue to practice? How much will they make on an ongoing basis? And what are their restrictions on where they could continue to practice after a certain period of time, or if they decide after a deal has been entered into that they're not happy and want to exit? And you put these pieces together, the purchase price, which you're getting upfront, less any dollars in or in value in the equity, then you have to ask yourself, and there's no singular answer here, how much do you, practice X, believe that this PE firm is going to generate long-term value to decide how much to attribute to the forward-looking value of that equity? That's important for the younger doctors because, as we've all said, typically there's purchase price and then compensation goes down. So for the more senior doctors, it's really in the short term, does the capital payment at lower tax rates, because it's capital gain, offset the reduction over a 2, 3, 5 year time horizon in their income? Whereas younger doctors, how much is compensation going to be able to go up after the 3 or 4 year transition to a more profitable, productive practice? And there in the outer years, what is the admittedly subjective assessment of the probability that the equity in these new ventures will be significant. I think it is also important to think about on the compensation side, how the incentives are structured. Today, we'll see different, we call them compensation models. Really, that's a simple way of saying how do doctors get paid for the work they do. Practices going into these deals need to understand how it works within their practice now. And there are lots of different ways, and there's no right answer. Typically, under PE, you see a very rigorous productivity model where compensation is tied strongly to how much a doctor produces. And that, circling back all the way to culture and strategy, becomes a personal decision on the part of physicians of how you want to operate and how those different values and priorities might impact your decision about whether to move forward in a sale or not.
Those are really good points. Just a couple of things on my end that I've always found interesting. The cash versus stock in the new entity with the owner docs. Most of the time, the advice given to the physicians is to try to cash out as much as they can. So it's to not put too much of their buyout in stocks of an entity going forward into the future. The other thing I've noticed
is that the PE firms have a tendency to be fairly aggressive on growth goals. Have you had similar experiences when working with physicians and PE firms?
I think the points you've raised are spot on and critical. And that's why we talked earlier about the importance of having a unified strategic vision within the group, because that balance, not surprisingly, PE firms would rather pay less in cash and more in equity. And the older physicians would rather more cash. And if the younger physicians really believe in the value proposition of practice in a corporate environment, would want more. And that's a balancing equation that is going to be unique to each practice. Another point that we ought to bring up is that for younger doctors, particularly those who may not yet be shareholders or partners in the practice, there are a number of questions to consider. What does the path to, it would no longer be called a partner, but what is the analog of that going to look like? What are the benefits to them? Likewise, what is the PE firm prepared to put forward for what they typically call retention bonuses? What are you going to get if you stay 2 years, 5 years? And that becomes more and more important as you expect to stay longer.
That's a very good point. I do recall in a number of cases, the PE firms being a little bit cautious or uncomfortable with some feedback from the younger docs and offering the retention bonuses to keep the docs in place. Let's go on to our final factor today.
This is as important as
everything we've spoken about so far with strategy, culture, finance, compensation. This seems to be the sweet spot, I guess, of any owner of any business, but especially for the owners of the physician practice, this whole idea of governance and control and decision-making. And I've always found it interesting to sit with a group of doctors who are on the verge of signing a deal where they become part of private equity firm, some other larger organization, and reminding them that if there's a decision they feel they need to make going forward, they can't just all sit in a conference room and make the decision themselves. There's this other entity now they have to deal with. I don't think they appreciate what it really means to lose control. Rod, did you want to talk about the governance factor?
This goes back to my initial comments about compromise. There's going to be several areas of governance in the organization. There's going to be the clinical governance, and that should remain 100% with the clinicians, but how to give care and provide care. Then there's the business aspect of it. The physicians will most likely no longer have a majority say in that aspect of the business. You know, typically we've seen 60-40, sometimes even less so on the business side for the physician piece of it. And to objectively speak to it, it is the private equity firm that is giving up dollars, and they're giving up dollars for some control. That's what they're looking for. So the physician is acquiring dollars, resources, finances, but that's the exchange. The reason why physicians would want that is that they believe that the financial and administrative skills of the PE firm are superior to their own, and that they will get them a better actualization in the longer term. So all of those factors, some of them are quite subjective, but they're meaningful. And I think the physician organization has to look at the importance of that. Do you have good profits now? You might be more reticent to give up business control than if you're a great clinician, but you haven't been able to figure out a way to actualize your business, meaning you can't get to some of those markers that you had, Michael, that you had said before. Are you in the 50th percentile, the 40th percentile, the 75th percentile? Where are you? And how do you get to a higher percentile? Presumably, it's by bringing in expertise that could help you do it. So governance, and where I would think most deals struggle with, is probably this category.
To build on that, I think that it's important to remember that there is not a right answer that fits all. There is not a single deal structure that fits all. It's really about the personality of the individual shareholders and junior docs in a group, how much, if they love doing the business or they hate doing the business, really can drive a decision if they think they're good at it or not good at it. As Ron was saying, that's a huge factor in deciding whether you want to be simply a clinician or whether you want to be an entrepreneur as well. And that each group needs to collectively decide for itself.
I think those are all good points. One thing that I found very helpful on the governance
side is to simplify the physician compensation plan.
At least some sort of a management committee, and some of the representatives from the practice are on the committee with the corporation. And one of the things I try to put all in these deals is that they have at least a monthly meeting. Hopefully they also get to see some financials for the organization. But most importantly, all of the physicians can get updated once a month on exactly how they're doing with their productivity
goals.
Physicians are very unhappy if they don't know where they stand. I think, as Ron said, the clearer the communication and the behaviors that everybody's agreed with, the better for the organization. The more communication, the more sharing of information, the more physicians understand as they go throughout the year how they stand with their compensation, seems to come back in a very positive way when they're able to do that. But there certainly is a lot of need here for business advisors. I always find that a lot of these deals that I hear about that don't work out too well, the physician organization tries to just do it themselves. I find if there are good business advisors involved, at least when the deal is done, everybody knows exactly what's going to happen. And that usually ends up being a positive experience for everybody. I want to thank Ron and Bert for being on the podcast today. We talked about strategic considerations, in particular, aligning goals, looking at maybe trying to improve the profitability of the practice before they actually decide to sell. We talked about the financial side, in particular, how that ties in very closely to compensation, capital gain payouts, potentially for the older owners versus the younger docs, taking a look at short-term versus long-term payments, probably some retention payments going out to the younger docs to keep them. Important discussion about culture, behaviors. Ron made the point how important it is that both sides have to come,
especially when it comes to governance.
And I want to thank everyone for listening in on the podcast.